Aloha. Welcome to KKCR's Talk Story, a series dedicated to highlighting Hawaiian musicians as they share stories and songs. Talk Story, or Vala'au in Hawaiian, is roughly translated as reminiscing and communicating. Palani Vaughn first made his musical mark with the album Meet Palani Vaughn and the Sunday Manoa. Rooted in a musically talented family, his education at Kamehameha schools from kindergarten to graduation further encouraged his love for Hawaiian music and culture. Palani's solo recordings have gone on to be recognized repeatedly at the Nā Hoku Hanohano Awards, one year receiving 8 nominations. In this talk story, Palani shares his personal history as well as his music, paying homage to the Hawaiian monarchy he is so renowned for honoring. Join me, Jessica Dofflemeyer, in this talk story with Palani Vaughn.
This is one of the first songs I wrote, and not realizing I could write a song, but I was rehearsing with the group that I assembled to record the first album I ever conceived, and that was the turned out to be the volume one of 4 volumes of Ya'oe Kala, which was devoted to the reign and times of King Kalakaua the 7th and last king of Hawaii. And so as I was researching music, I found all of the Hawaiian monarchy songs, and those were and still are considered the classics, composed by the king himself, his sister Queen Liliʻuokalani, who followed him on the throne, a younger brother who died at a young age, Prince Leleiohokukalahoʻoleva, and Miriam Likelike, another sister, who was the mother of Princess Kaʻiulani. And they were all songwriters, prolific songwriters. But I was looking for music that would tell the story, the history of our people of that time, because it was a very significant time, a turning point. I think probably the most important turning point for Hawaiian people was during the reign of King Kamehameha, who had unified the islands and caused the Hawaiian people to be one nation. And Kalakaua, although he was not passed the throne by the preceding king, became the 2nd elected king of the Hawaiian Islands. Now, it wasn't a popular election. It was an election by the House of Nobles, which is equivalent to the House of Nobles in the British Parliament. And so these were all chiefly representatives or nobility. And although his election wasn't very popular with Oahu people, he won a clear majority. The Oahu people were backing Queen Emma, who was the widowed queen of King Kamehameha IV. And she was running against Kalakaua at the time. And so in the election year, 1874, February 12th, when the results were known, the Honolulu people rioted so badly, they broke into the legislative building and were throwing the nobles out the window. And I saw some of the photographs taken after the melee, and there were black eyes and broken legs, and it was a pretty bad scene. But these were the backers of Queen Emma. Later during his reign, King Kalakaua and Queen Emma became tolerable friends. But he was important to us because King Kalakaua freed the Hawaiian people to explore many, many directions in the realm of creative arts. And while creating, he was also, and his family were concerned about holding on to the past and to keep the traditions alive. So what I did with this particular song, Ka'ahi Kahului. Ka'a is the word for vehicle of any kind. Ahi means fire. And so the train or locomotive is called the fire car, Ka'ahi. And Kahului identifies the place, the name of the railroad company, which after Kalakaua had signed the act to promote railroading in 1876, in 1879, the first tracks were laid on the island of Maui, 3.5 miles of track from the sugar plantation town of Wailuku to the seaport town of Kahului. And by the train, they were able to convey sugar to the port. But the Hawaiians loved riding the train. And so chuku chuku became the Hawaiian word for choo-choo. And so I decided to incorporate all of these interesting elements into the song that would tell the story of the growing industry in our islands and how King Kalakaua played a very important and integral part in all of that. And so the song honors Kalakaua. Lohe mai e na ke ki hanau, o ka ina lohe mai I ka mo o lelo chuku. A I ko o ko kalani hope, ka mea I ka kakona inoa. Kalani hope means the last king. Lohe mai e na ke ki hanau, o ka ina lohe mai I ka mo o lelo chuku. A I ko o ko kalani hope, ka mea I ka kakona inoa. And the last words say, the one who signed that document promoting the railroads. Woohoo! Ka'ahi kahului ki alau a I Wailuku. Woohoo! Ka'ahi kahului chuku chuku mua o Hawaii. Chuku chuku mua o Hawaii. Chuku chuku, chuku chuku, chuku chuku, chuku chuku, chuku chuku, chuku chuku. Aloha, everybody off. So that was the story of my first composition that I assembled. And, you know, it's interesting. You've had Dennis Kamakahi on board. And Dennis was a member of the group that I assembled called Naleo O Nu'uanu, Senator Daniakaka's son, Danny Jr. was the other guitarist of the group. And there was Brian Hussey. He was the stand-up bass player. And he went on to some other recording work after the group disbanded. And the ukulele player was Bruce Spencer, who is currently with the group Mauna Lua. So Ka'ahi Kahului was actually composed during the rehearsal. And I said to the guys, I said, you know what, let's give me a sound of the guitar that, or music that sounds like a train. So we came up with this. And I said, just give me the, just imitate the sound. You know. So they came up with that. And I said, well, give me a sound of a train whistle. So they had a different way of chording it. We did all of that. And then I guess I established the mood, and suddenly I was just singing the song. I went, hey, keep playing it. And it was, it's a rather simple melody. But it was just the idea of getting a fun song that told a story. And that's basically what the lyrics say. Here's a short story. Eia ka mo'olelo pokole. Ke ka'ahi mua o Hawaii'i of the first train. Chuku chuku maila, chuku chuku maila. Kuehu aku make ala hau. Stirring dust down the tracks, the train tracks. Ala is the road or the path. Hau means iron. So ala hau is the railroad track, is the iron track. And so that was just a matter of minutes in writing. And I guess, you know, if any musician, songwriter has just the right background music going, he can do just about anything. So you get into a mood, a spirit, I guess, you somehow connect.
Well, it's a great song. Maybe you can talk about how you connected with the recording business, getting involved with that. How did you get your start in that world?
You know, you always want to, I always feel, and Hawaiians say you should honor those who paved the way for you. I don't know if you know Sam Kapu Jr. He's been famous in the entertainment field, but he has become more famous in his role as a DJ on KINE. He and I are classmates. We had just graduated from Kamehameha schools. And he and I had been watching television, local television. I'm pretty sure it was Channel 4. And there was this Hawaiian musician behind an organ playing his music. It was Don Ho. And Don Ho was on this, he had a weekly television show. And we said, wow, you heard that guy, man. And so we decided we would go to see one of the sessions, and we did. But we got to know him, and then he was playing at the old Duka Hanamoku's restaurant. Of course, Duka Hanamoku was always there. Another aside, my younger brother was a chauffeur for Duka Hanamoku up until the time he died. In fact, I think I was the last person to talk to him over the telephone. He had called for my brother to pick him up. And when we couldn't find my brother, he decided to go out himself, and he tripped at the curb and hit his head. And that's how he had died at that moment. So I kind of, regret not having tried to do something at the time. It could have prevented that accident. But anyway, he was, our ambassador of aloha. Duke was quite famous and always honored Don Ho at his establishment. So anyway, Don was very much into nurturing young talent. He had discovered Marlene Tsai that way. I'm getting to why I'm honoring him, because he offered us contracts to work with him. So he wanted to record us. And I was at the UH at the time. And I said, I thanked him, but I said, my parents want me to finish my education. And I mean, if I can do this, sing and do my education at the same time, fine. But Sam and Scrappy Oliveira was the other one. They were available. So he did their albums. And he said, well, you work on yours. When you're ready, find Hawaiian music and let me know. While I was in school, I let my interests be known to certain other people who were in my classes. And I assembled the group. one of my classmates in one of my classes, Hawaiian classes, was Peter Moon. And Peter Moon has become so famous as the leader of the Sunday Manoa. But what people don't know is that he and I co-founded, well, actually it was, the album was a Don Ho album for me. And when I assembled the group, Peter happened to be surfing friends with Gabby Pahinui's, not eldest son, but one of the older ones. His name was James Bla Pahinui. James also was playing music with another, the Kalima family was known as 1,000 Pounds of Melody, Jesse Kalima and his brothers. And one of the brothers was Albert Kalima Sr., played bass. And his son, Albert Jr., who was called Baby, 300-something pounds of baby, was the bass player who jammed with them. And then Cyril Pahinui, he was only 15 at the time, was interested in joining to play Hawaiian music with us. So we wound up rehearsing either at my maternal grandmother's house in Waimanalo, sometimes over at Gabby's house, Pahinui's house, and then in Manoa, sometimes at Peter's, sometimes at my house in Manoa. And so we were assembling the songs. I was choosing all these numbers and was trying to get, I was recording tapes, demo tapes to take to Don Ho to listen to. I'd have to meet him, you know, like 3 a.m. over at his penthouse. And it was always the post parties, you know, every night was a party. And I understood that. I understood. And Don was very, you know, patient and tried to, so I said, yeah, put him on the tape recorder. So I played it. Oh, sounds good. You know, and I said, yeah. Now, as fate would have it, things were happening that were beyond my control. Number one, I was in the National Guard. And at the same time, we were involved as a nation in Vietnam. In the end, we were the first National Guard unit to be activated in the nation for this war. But what happened is I finished my time at UH and I walked away with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. And I began to work as a paste-up artist for the Star Bulletin Printing Company that no longer exists. So I was doing that and singing, trying to put the music together, rehearsing here and there, and taking the tapes to Don Ho and trying to get to work on time and attending National Guard meetings on the weekends. It was just really a trialful time for me. And then Peter asked me if he could take the tape and listen to it, let some people listen. I said, okay, but, you know, take care of it. I didn't realize that he had taken it to the president, the owner of the Hula Records label, who was Don McDermott Jr. He took him the tape, and next thing I knew, he said they want to record us right away. And I said, but I think that's great, but Don Ho is waiting. I can't do this. Anyway, long story short, I knew that the group was getting anxious. I had the military breathing down my throat. I didn't know how long I could hold on to a group that was ready to play and sounding darn good. So I went to Don and I said, you know, I don't want to do this, but I need your blessing and to let me do this, you know, because I have this concern. And he was very understanding. He said, yeah, you go. And he wished me well. And, you know, I thank Don Ho for his nurturing skills and what he's done for not just me, but many other stars who've come along. But he continues to do that. Just an amazing man. And I respect him. He's got longevity, tremendous longevity. And I think people equate Hawaii with Don Ho. You know, that's it. Thank you. Hemana o no kapua e pua lehi lehua mamo o ka uka e pua laule o hao
I'm named after my father, whose name is Frank Vaughan Sr. He had been named after his father, Frank Horace Vaughan, who never stuck around long enough to raise my dad, unfortunately, and my aunt and my uncle. He's one of those characters, you know, that came and took off, and we never knew him, ever. So, but I always complained about not having a Hawaiian name. And my brother, who was named Kahuilani Maumau Kamali'i, and couldn't say his name, I was asking him, what's my Hawaiian name? I said, how come I didn't get that name? Anyway, when I was getting ready to record, I said, Tutu, her name was Ka'umoana. I said, I need a Hawaiian name. Your father's going to be so hurt. I said, I know, but I don't think it's going to work to be Frank Vaughan Jr., singing that way. So she goes, you know, when he was small and in the household, his mother, my grandmother was half Hawaiian, half Chinese. Her mother and her father lived with her. He was pure Chinese and she was pure Hawaiian. So they either spoke Hawaiian in the house or Chinese. Nobody spoke English. So, and he was one of those few born at home, not in a hospital. So those are those early days before the local people were, you know, able to take advantage of that in maternity hospital deliveries. So they didn't call him Frank in the house. They called him Palani. And so I said, that's perfect. I don't hurt my father. And if that's something that was legitimately his name through his younger years, then let's say Palani. That's fine with me for now. But I still want a Hawaiian name. Anyway, we never got beyond that. So I wasn't prepared for what celebrity, you know, this mass exposure to music and radio would bring.
Yeah, you were one of the forerunners bringing back that Hawaiian music and a part of that resurgence. Maybe you can share a little more about what had gone on before with Hawaiian music and culture, just some history, background.
The Hawaiian music, as we know it today, was not a popular genre of music. Almost became non-existent. Hawaiian music's been challenged over many generations, beginning with the first contact with missionaries, because they banned dancing, hula, and music, and chants, because they were lascivious, they felt. But they also, there was another reason, and maybe perhaps we should understand that many of the chants honored the Hawaiian gods and the Hawaiian royalty, ali'i. And although I'm a Christian, it was offensive to the missionaries that the one God that they were introducing to the Hawaiian people, that had to be God that was honored. And while I believe that, I still think that the heartstring of our Hawaiian people is tied to our language, is tied to our cultural traditions. King Kalakaua often said, hula is the language of the heart, and therefore the heartbeat of the Hawaiian people. And so that is a wonderful adage. You know, he was quite a creative guy, and I tried to recognize him in the shows I performed. And we took the show around the world pretty much. We performed in Japan and coordinating it along centennial lines. So during the 100th year of King Kalakaua's world tour, and his first stop was in Japan. We put on this great show in Japan, went on television, and it was really nice to get that message out so the Japanese people would understand that there was a great connection between the Hawaiian people and Japan far before the tourist era.
We will return to Kauai Community Radio's Talk Story with Palani Vaughn after your station's identification.
One day I heard this poem, and it was called Voices on the Wind. And when I performed the song, I wrote the song that I entitled Voices on the Wind, because it just touched me that that's probably what we listen to when we're composing, when we are feeling the calling of and the urge to do something that we've never done before. Why am I doing this? I don't know. I would often ask, why am I down here researching when I should be sleeping? You know, why am I out here just every day doing this? But what I did was follow the urge. I said, I don't know. I would say to them, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I know I have to do this. And it caused me to learn more about Kinkalakaua, our own history. I cried many tears when I learned, you don't learn these things in school. They don't teach you that the overthrow was an illegal overthrow. Because, you know, and I can understand, it makes America look bad. So I did this album, the first album. The second album came along via Oikala. And then I was into my reflective, just constantly reflecting, and I heard this poem, and I began with this to write this song. In Hawaiian, kupuna means grandparent or ancestor. Our grandparents, our ancestors, speak to us. And if we listen a little more closely to things, though our kupuna kahiko, our ancient forefathers, have long passed from this earth, they are not gone. For they live on in the legends, in the chants, in the songs, in the dances of our people. And if we listen a little more closely to things, perhaps we can hear their voices in the winds, in the whispering seas, for they are one with the Aina. Sons and daughters of these islands, are you listening to the voices of our kupuna? In the swirling winds, high on ancient pali, hear them. The voices on the winds above the ocean, carried from the whispering surf of timeless seas, chanting mele sacred to our native Aina and to the pride our nation once did see. Beckoning to us, sisters and brothers, Eho'o Ikaika, O Mako, Eho'o Ala. Thank you.
So beautiful.
The song I just sang, Voices on the Wind, I had placed on the volume 3, which I wound up doing pretty much myself. The musicians had fallen away, so I began to, short of playing bass, and bass players came in and string musicians, but I began to play more guitar and work it, and just actually, you hear of people, musicians, building the music right there in the studio. And although I didn't want to do it, I was almost compelled to do that because I could feel the spirit of it. And Herb Ono was the owner of the studio. I thank him with great aloha. Little Japanese man, but he loved my music. And he loved to help young musicians. And he was a mentor. You know, he just told me, come on, you want to go in now? Go in now. The same way people like the Ipole Manu song or Emana Ohe Aloha. I get asked to do that all the time. But they don't realize that I was sitting outside talking story with people, and he said, somebody just canceled. You want to go and do the song? I went, I'm not ready. You know? And he says, well, try. And I went in, and it was just, without rehearsal, it was just, at the time, I said, no, this is junk. And he said, no, it's good. And he was right. It turned out. So, you know, you're not always the best judge of yourself. You know, it's just one of those things. So this Voices on the Wind and the other songs that were on this, I wrote quite a number of them that were original, and one was Kamamakakaua, which became the fight song of the girls' volleyball team that won the championship for UH in that year, and they would come out, ku-e, ku-e. And now you hear all the sovereignty groups yelling out ku-e. Well, I employed the words into the chant of the song. All I was trying to do was to memorialize the bravery, the courage of Hawaiian warriors. I call them Hawaiian warriors of the time, of the Kalakaua era. King Kalakaua had been compelled at gunpoint, and there were 600 rifles. They were shipped in illegally, but they were at the customs house, and the Hawaiian customs guards were, you know, everything's peaceful. And these Haole guys were part of the Honolulu Rifles and the Committee of Safety, they called themselves. They had rifles and guns and came down armed, and they broke in and, holding the customs officers at gunpoint, broke open the cases, and all of those guys came down, armed themselves right away. So they had brand new Springfields and ammunition, and they were an armed army. They then marched on King Kalakaua's palace with this constitution, and they made him sign it at bayonet point and gunpoint. It was called the Bayonet Constitution of 1887. And he, under protest, signed it, but essentially where the damage was done, it wasn't so much attacking the king. He was allowed to remain king, but what it did was it eliminated Hawaiians from the voting, from the right to vote. It put a qualification of $600 of personal income or savings, or that equivalent in property, personal, real property. If you didn't have it, you couldn't vote. You didn't qualify, voter qualification. So most Hawaiians were just farmers and fishermen subsistence. They didn't know about that kind of stuff. Never come along. So for the most part, most of the Hawaiian race was disenfranchised. But it was their way of getting their political power in place. And so I read about this, and it made me very angry. And then I read how, you know, King Kalakaua had been a much forward-thinking man. So he went on this world tour in 1881, the first world leader in history to go on a world tour of goodwill. Now everybody does it. And he was the first. Somebody who was a standing leader of a nation. And he had a lot of problems even getting that done, because the government didn't want to let him. It was, the influence of that missionary party. But he went, and he was honored by the Emperor of Japan. People don't realize we had treaties. We had preferred nation treaties with Japan and with other nations around the world. So King Kalakaua, by sailing into Yokohama Bay, had to get the full-on cannon salutes from all the nation's warships. So when he was coming in on the ship, and these guys are all saluting him, and the guns are going off, flags are flying, Hawaiian flags are up, And then the emperor's sons come off. And by the way, the emperor's band is playing Ho'oponui on the shore. And they come off and they come to greet him. And these are the emperor's, the princes, the crown prince. And they welcome him and take him to a palace that he resides in. And anyway, the tour is just wonderful, except for being exposed to the fact that world's leaders were in danger. So Tsar Nicholas was assassinated in Russia. So while he was in Japan, they mourned the passing, the death of this Tsar. And then by the time he had gotten to New York City, President Garfield had been assassinated. So two assassinations in a matter of 9 months of world travel. So when King Kalakaua returned, he was a very sober king. But I think this tells the story of who he was and why he did, you know, focus on the improving of his Hawaiian race. His motto for his reign was Ho'olu Lahui. And so you've seen Lahui Hawaii, the use of those words. He coined that phrase. That means the revitalization of the race. When Captain Cook first came to the islands, they estimated, low estimates, about 200 or so thousand Hawaiians in existence. Estimates went higher. When he visited the islands, he was doing the Makahiki, which was a gathering time. So they could estimate how many people were gathered in one or more locations for the festivals, that this was the entire population. But it's not always true, you know. But anyway, the high end, they said maybe a million, million and a half. Now that was in 1778, 79. King Kalakaua comes to the throne in 1874. There were only 43,000 Hawaiian and part Hawaiian and half Hawaiian left in the world. And by the time Liliʻu becomes queen, there were only 39,000. But what King Kalakaua had urged, Ho'olu Lahui, increased the race. So the first plan was to urge the Hawaiian people to have many children. My paternal great-grandmother and my maternal great-grandmother were all part of very large families. My paternal great-grandmother was one of, I think it was 19 or 20 children. The other side, maternal great-grandmother, was one of 12. But there was a high death rate in those days, so King Kalakaua played the odds, you know. He was a gambling man. He knew how to play the odds. But the other side of his plan, his strategy, was to encourage other races to come and mix and mingle the blood of the Hawaiian people with them. And so when you have then the first immigration, and if you look at today's complexion of Hawaiians, we're part Chinese, part Portuguese, part English, German, and they came from all over the world. Of course, his hope was that the Hawaiian people would continue. Anyway, so, you know, this is the sense of the man. And so, on October 29th, 1881, King Kalakaua had returned from a 9-month to 10-month long tour, circumnavigation of the globe, the first in world history. Upon his return, he spoke to his people. I have traveled over many lands and distant seas, to India afar and China renowned. I have touched the shores of Africa and seen the boundaries of Europe. And I have met the great ones of all the lands. As I stood at the sides of heads of governments, next to leaders proud of their rule, their authority over their own, I realized how small and weak is the power I hold. For mine is a throne established upon a heap of lava, where they rule, millions obey their commands,
Only a few thousands can I count under my care. Yet one thought came to me, of which I may boast, that of all the beauties locked within the embrace of these shores, one is a jewel more precious than any owned by my fellow monarchs. I have nothing in my kingdom to dread. My safety is no concern. I require no bodyguards. Mine is the boast that a pearl of great price has fallen to me from above. Mine. This way. Aloha, aloha a eana mā kō, I ke ehu whāwai o Kalani. We will fondly remember the footprints of the king. David Laamea Kamana Nakapu Mahinu lani, nalu ia ehu o nalani, lumia lani, kala kaua. I'm sorry I broke up right at that. Hard for me sometimes.
He obviously made that speech before they came to his office at gunpoint.
Yeah. And it was a hard time. You know, those who had done this to him tried to get a particular a missionary who was very key in the community, very much one who had influence over the Hawaiian people. Hyde was his name. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, you speak as though this was a popular movement, but no, the Hawaiian people had nothing to do with this. In fact, when it happened, they just looked on in blank astonishment and accepted the inevitable, the outcome. But he wouldn't join them to celebrate it as a popular revolution, because it wasn't. It was not at all. So I think it helps to understand why the activists are so vehement and vocal, because we carry the pain of our ancestors with us. One of the things I've been hoping to do is to, I've talked about it, I had this concept of building a memorial in memory of our former Hawaiian nation, because they in fact were the Hawaiian nation that no longer exists, although technically Hawaiian sovereignty say no, by international law, it still is. And simply because they pretty much are reflected in that. I don't know if you've heard of the petition that was circulated, anti-annexation. So I was proud to say my ancestors' names are there. And everybody kind of wonders, am I going to find the name? Because there were Hawaiians who didn't, I guess for their reasons, were not supportive of the monarchy.
There's so much more I want to ask you, but I at least want to get maybe one more song. That would be great.
Hawaiian poetry, metaphors. A Hawaiian woman would be as a lover. Even there's a child. Anyway, a flower can be a female. And generally the male is represented by a bird. Because, of course, when the bird feeds on the flower, it's symbolic of the sexual copulation. And so the Hawaiians are very observant of those things. So when they wanted to talk about lovemaking. It wasn't in a crude way. It was done in a poetic way and a fun way. And so I decided to do a song that was much like that. The song is entitled Himanu Ula Ula. Ula Ula is the color red. And Manu Ula Ula refers to the Ivy bird, which most often is used to represent the Hawaiian man, a warrior. And the flower that the Ivy bird would feed upon would be the lehua, ohi'a lehua. And ohi'a lehua comes more in more colors than the red from that Hepua Vehiva song that I sang. That's about lehua mamo, which is a yellow. And so once the song came out, I noticed the proliferation of lehua mamo lays were coming and people were becoming aware of it. So that's why I was saying my music, I tried to get messages out and expound a bit on history or share little bits of cultural knowledge. And because I never knew they came in. I always knew of the red lehua, period. But it comes in, it can come in white lehua. It can be a pink, which if you look at the mountain apple tree, they call it ohi'a ai lehua. And that flower is pinkish. It's fuchsia, I guess. Anyway, it's pink to me. And then it can come in a purplish, just various hues. So it can be very colorful if you know where the trees are that grow the flowers and have the time to, you know, climb the mountains and go get them and make your lays. You can make a very colorful presentation. But in this case, the song is about the bird Himanu Ula Ula, who is seeking his favorite lehua flower. He's flitting through the trees looking for her. And he says, you know, you can hide from me, but I'm the great seeker. But then he starts doubting himself. In the end, he says, did a wind come and knock you out of the tree? And the wind is more akin, it's another metaphor for another man. Then another man come along and sweep you away. And so, and then this song was used, if you ever hear Johnny Lum Ho? Johnny Lum Ho is a very famous kumuhula out of Hilo. And to my surprise, after the song had come out, I'm watching the Merry Monarch Festival on TV, and here comes Johnny Lum Ho, and they're performing my song, Himanu Ula Ula. And he won for that division, the Hula Awana, female Hula Awana. And I got to know him after that. We became very good friends. Ayo, 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 ayo. Au hea ue, e ku upule humala. E manu ula ula, imi vai lewa. Lohe mai kandile a, kukua a alala. Mai nā kini maka, lehua ulala. Eo, 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 eo. Au he oe, e kupu lehuala. E manu ula ula, imi vai lehuala. Lohe mai kandile a, kukua a alala. Mai nā kini maka, lehua ulala. Eo, 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 eo. Pe'e poli ko aloha, a pe'e pe'e kua oela. O vauka I miloa, a pili ka hauala. No laila e tukuma, e vane mai voela. A laila mukiki, ko vai lehuala. Eo, eo. Kamanu I iwi ea, lele I luna I lalo, imi vai ka lehua la. Ho I loli no ka lehua, palena ole ea. Lele I luna I lalo, kamanu I iwi ea. E mali umai ue, ke kaline I a ura. Ka iwi o ka lohe mai kanile ala. No And I hope someone hasn't taken you away from me.
KKCR would like to thank Palani Vaughn for sharing with us in this edition of Talk Story. Production, editing, and interview were done by Jessica Dofflemeyer. Engineering and mixing were done by Dean Rogers. Talk Story was recorded in the studios of Kauai Community Radio and is the fourth in a series produced by KKCR. For more information about this program and Kauai Community Radio, you can visit www.kkcr.org or call 808-826-7774. Funding is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Ahui ho, until we meet again.